On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy, supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
The country, although there have been many challenges in dealing with COVID-19, the country is in a broadly positive place right now. Certainly more positive than it was 6 weeks ago when the country found itself having to enter into a second full lockdown. But some of the decisions that the government has made in deciding to relax those lockdowns are worthy of some scrutiny. So I'm delighted to say we have the Minister for Health and Fianna Fáil TD for Wicklow, Stephen Donnelly, with us in studio. Minister, thank you very much for coming in this afternoon. Your reflections, first of all, on where we are. Obviously, the numbers are still higher than many people would like them to have been. They're certainly much higher than NPHET had envisaged 6 weeks ago. But nonetheless, we're in a better place now broadly than 6 weeks previous.
Yeah, good morning, Gavin. We are in a good place now. There were still very hard decisions that had to be made during the week. And not everyone will be happy with the decisions that have been made because there are still some restrictions in place. We have to have them in place. But relative to almost every other country in Europe, we are in a good spot. We're in a good spot because we moved early. We moved comprehensively. Our healthcare workers have been absolutely fantastic in how they've responded, and the public have backed level five. So we moved from level three. We then added in no household visits. That was a very, very effective measure, very hard for people, but it worked incredibly well. Level five, we're now coming to the end. We're halfway through the last week of level five. And I'm happy to report that because of the hard work that everybody has put in, we've had the biggest reduction in COVID cases anywhere in Europe. And more importantly, if you look at wave one versus wave two for us and for all the European countries, because ultimately what this all comes down to is keeping people alive, we've had more than a 90% reduction in COVID fatalities. We've had the biggest reduction in fatalities of any country in Europe. So for every 10 people who died of COVID
in wave one,
less than one died in wave two, even though the case numbers were about the same. Now, obviously, any death is one too many. But for Ireland to have achieved the biggest reduction in fatalities per million population is a testament to the work everyone has put in. And as Health Minister, I have to say a huge, huge thank you to the healthcare workers. They've been fantastic.
When we entered into the 6 weeks of the second lockdown, again, NPHET's projection at the end was that they thought or they hoped that we would be somewhere around 100 cases per day. We had the lowest figures for quite some while on Friday evening, 206. It's still double what NPHET had anticipated. Why do you think they haven't fallen as much as the modelling suggested?
Well, so first of all, they're still falling. Right. So on Friday, the figures I was given, I have them here in front of me, were that our 14-day incident rate is 98. So it's dropped below 100 for the first time.
And but it's 94, I think, again, effective as yesterday.
Right.
As well. Yeah.
And just as importantly, our 7-day was 40, which means that the figures are still falling and falling. And we would expect them to continue to fall for some time. NPHET wasn't so much predicting we would get to 100. What NPHET was saying was, if we have an R value of 0.6, 0.8, various numbers, that we could get down that low.
But then why hasn't the R number gone that low then? They reckon it's now between 0.7 and 1.
It did go pretty low. So R went down to about 0.6. By best estimates now are it's below 1. But essentially the government's view was we've got to keep it below 1 the whole time. It has stayed below 1 the whole time. And that's why we've seen the single biggest reduction in cases anywhere in Europe. So it has gone very, very well in terms of reducing cases, which is what it was meant to do, reducing fatalities, which is what it was meant to do. And remember, Gavin, while that happened, while there were very serious restrictions in place in terms of visits, and obviously hospitality was closed down, the schools were open, the hospitals were open, manufacturing was open, construction was open. It was a very different lockdown, if you like. I'm told to stop using that word, but it was a very different one to the to the first wave.
Well, even if the R number still is now below one, NPHET's submission to you ahead of this cabinet meeting day on Friday, it's a fairly weighty one. It's 36 pages. I can't remember seeing a letter that long before. In it, they reckon that the R number over Christmas, when you allow for hospitality and for household visits, could reach 2.0, and they believe that it could probably reach 1.2 in the meantime. And they were voicing serious concerns that this could have yet again another overwhelming effect on the healthcare system, where people at the end of all of that wouldn't be able to get the care that they need. So when NPHET issues you with a warning like that, why do you still then go ahead with deciding to allow hospitality for 3 weeks and then hospitality and house visits for 3 weeks after?
So the decision that was taken on Friday by Cabinet is pretty closely lined up to NPHET. So NPHET said move to level three, we're moving to level three. NPHET said relax the restrictions for the obvious reasons around the Christmas period for 2 weeks. So we're doing that. So there were a lot of recommendations Neffet made that we've taken. And on the very on the issue you raise, which is what it all comes down to, is how do we keep the virus suppressed? Because we know that it's going to loosen up. Mm. We know that the Christmas period is a unique period in Ireland in terms of socialisation.
And they're telling you that it's going to double on a roughly weekly basis over the Christmas period. If the R number is 2.0 between December the 18th and January the 6th.
So just to be clear, they're not saying that's going to happen. What Neffet do is they give us various projections. They say if the R number is, and you'll have seen.
And their projections that it will get to 2.
I know you like your data, and you'd be delighted to know that on gov.ie now, the CSO data and all the various projections are up there. But what Neffet really is saying is, if the following things happen, then we would be looking at higher case numbers. So what Neffet said to us was, we need as a country to choose between increased household visits and opening up hospitality. And Neffet's view was, keep hospitality closed. So all restaurants, all gastropubs, all pubs, keep them closed, but allow household visits to go up. But don't do both. So essentially, government has agreed with the vast majority of things Neffet has said, including on this specific one. Government has said, right, we won't do both. Mm. But what we're going to do is we're going to open up on hospitality.
But,
so we're going to open the restaurants.
But for 3 weeks of Christmas, you are doing both. And this is what Neffet is so concerned about.
In a limited way, though. So Neffet's request was that there was essentially no hospitality sector right through the end of the year and into January. And government's view is that just isn't possible to do, that the hospitality sector has been damaged so badly this year, through nobody's fault, but because of COVID. This is the one time of the year where they can begin to claw back a little bit. But also critically, Gavin, like, people have been in their houses now for 5.5 weeks or longer. People need to be able to go out. And certainly around the country, what people are saying to me is, we want to be safe, we want to do the right thing, but for the love of God, we do also, I want to meet my mum or my dad for a dinner.
So you want to go out and do it in a coffee shop where things are supervised, and you know that you can only stay there for a certain length of time instead of going into someone's home.
Exactly. There's no easy answers to any of this.
But well, it does create the weird analogous problem that if you want to go and meet your mum and dad or your brother and sister or someone else, that you can't do it in their house, but you can still do it in a restaurant. Or, for example, as we were saying, you know, before we came on air, under level 3, you're only allowed to meet one other household when you go outdoors. So if I want to meet 2 colleagues from work in a park at lunchtime, I can't do it, but I'm still allowed to go and sit inside and have lunch with them in an indoor place, which is less ventilated. That doesn't seem sensible.
Well, it is sensible, but it may not seem obvious. And so anytime we have to choose priorities, these anomalies rise. And you're right, they are anomalies. The only time when we don't have anomalies is when everything is open or everything is closed. And as you know, the level, the framework we use prioritizes schools, it prioritizes healthcare and certain things. What I would say to you, Gavin, is when you look at the information and the data that's now been put up online that very much informed our decision making last week, what you'll see is when we moved to what is being called level 3+, which essentially was the ban on household visits, it had a huge impact. And so we know that it works. We know it's very, very effective. And so that's one of the things that's driving the thinking, is this is a measure government brought in. It worked incredibly well. It comes at a very high personal cost for people, but it worked incredibly well. Inevitably, cases are going to go up during December. But what we've got to try and do is we've got to try and manage that risk and do everything we can to stop them being too high in January.
Some of the other data that you've published on the website is the data that was compiled by the consultancy firm EY, known back in the day as Ernst & Young. And that's the data which has been cited against the reopening of wet pubs. And listeners will have heard us play the clip from Micheál Martin at the press conference on Friday night, where he said that there was EY data which clearly suggested that the reopening of wet pubs coincided with a significant rise in COVID-19 cases, and he pointed to some local electoral areas to back that up. Is there a case, though, that this could be correlation and not causation? Because in the same breath, the Taoiseach said, yes, we reopened the wet pubs, but we also reopened universities at the same time. There were other local incidents like GAA celebrations, which got a little bit out of hand, or which were more exuberant than they should have been, and they also coincided. It seems like a bit of a reach to say that all of these things happen at one time, but that wet pubs are the one cause that you can identify. Surely that's post hoc and propter hoc. It's a kind of a logical fallacy to say that that's the one thing you blame it on.
It would be, and I don't think anyone is suggesting that. My view, and I know the Taoiseach's view, because we've discussed this at length, is that there was essentially what you've said, there was a set of contributory factors. So what happened? There were various sporting celebrations in different counties. The wet pubs were opened up. The colleges and the universities went back, and it all happened more or less at the same time. Did the universities going back have an impact and the colleges going back? It did. And we can see that in the data. But what you can also see in the data, Gavin, is if you look at the specific counties or even the local electoral areas where there were some of these post-sports celebrations, you can track it right to that.
But then that's unique to behaviour and not to the venues that allow it. I mean, you had 25 out of 26 counties had wet pubs that reopened for that fortnight. So it shouldn't matter that you had individual behaviours that weren't acceptable. It was the people and not the venue or the forum that facilitated that.
Well, it's always the people. I mean, ultimately, this virus spreads when we get together. But the evidence from Ireland is very strong. The evidence from around the world is very strong that the pubs unfortunately become places, in spite of the very, very best efforts of publicans around the country, where people do let their guard down. We begin to talk a little bit louder. We begin to get a little bit closer to each other. And these so-called super spreading events, and there's mounting evidence that about 10% of these events cause about 80% of the cases. We do have pretty strong evidence now that they are linked to combinations, including things that happen in wet pubs. But I think you're absolutely right. It's not about blame. No one is blaming the publicans. Any of the pubs I've been in, it's very clearly demarcated. You can't stand at the bar. You have to have your distance. The reality is, and what we're seeing in Ireland, what other countries are seeing, is we let our guard down and you get these super spreader events.
I suppose the point is that, can you say for certain that it was the reopening of wet pubs that caused the surges, or was it merely the fact that the reopening of the wet pubs for the fortnight that they were open coincided with those spikes?
If you wanted to be rigorously analytical about it, it will be quite a bit of time before mathematicians will be able to prove causality, because there's very complex analysis you have to do to basically prove causality.
Should you deny people their livelihoods in the meantime, then, if you're not able to rigorously prove that it's their livelihoods that are responsible?
We wouldn't be able to make any decisions on COVID if that's how we had to operate. The reality is, Gavin, we're having to make life and death decisions in real time with imperfect data every single week, as is every other country. What we do know is that there was a very close relationship between various things happening, as you've said. So sporting event celebrations and the opening of the wet pubs and third level going back. We do know, for example, there was a very clear timeline from when we brought in the household restrictions to when the number of cases began to go down. That's the world we live in. We don't like to prove the kind of causality you're talking about would take an academic about a year. We don't have a year to wait for the academic paper before we make these decisions. We're having to do it in real time.
Okay. Can I ask you about the potential rollout of a vaccine? We know that there are no vaccines that are on the market yet. We all hope that it won't be too long. I know the rollout progress, or the rollout plan under Breed McCraw, is a work in progress, but there seems to be some optimism in today's papers that if a virus is sanctioned in the next fortnight, that it could actually be administered potentially within a couple of weeks. If it's cleared, when could we see at least the first vaccine being administered in this country?
So potentially very, very closely. So BioNTech and Pfizer, BioNTech, Pfizer and AstraZeneca, for example, they're two of the ones we're signed up to. They're looking for market authorization within the coming weeks. Now, there is an additional piece of work that has to be done, but potentially early in the new year, we could be looking at things. And Brian McGrath and his team are obviously very quickly putting in place the distribution needed for that.
So not necessarily December, but potentially very early January.
I'd say December is unlikely, to be honest with you, but quite soon. And, you know, it's very heartwarming, because if we go back even a few months, the experts were saying that it would be mid next year, potentially the end of next year, or indeed in 3 or 4 years' time before we might see these things. So it really has been very heartwarming. Ireland's currently signed up to 4 of the vaccines. And on Tuesday, I'm bringing a memo to government on a 5th one as well. So Ireland is certainly very much playing our part in making sure we're involved. We have advanced purchase of these vaccines, and for various of the ones we have advance purchase of several million doses. So it is looking good.
If you have access to several million doses, and then presumably the logistics are also being worked out as well, the one then other issue would be enthusiasm for take-up. Has the state given any thought, or would you ever consider making it mandatory to receive a COVID-19 vaccine if they were free and available?
So several EU countries have introduced legislation on mandatory vaccination. We haven't, and I can tell you there has been no conversation at a government level about doing that. My strong preference would that it is that it would be voluntary. And actually, if you look at the front page of the Sunday Business Post, for example, today, there's a very strong, 74% said they're in favour of taking the vaccine. We've just rolled out the biggest flu vaccination programme in the history of the state. And indeed, if we could get our hands on more flu vaccine, people are looking to take it. And there's also been a very strong uptake in the HPV vaccine. So there is this anti-vax movement. A lot of what I've seen is misinformation, and I think it's very dangerous. But I think the vast majority of people see that for what it is. And I think people are well disposed to taking the vaccine when it comes out.
Okay. This may be a technical question, but God forbid, if there were to be any issues with a vaccine, who would carry the liability? Because I know the state's policy already is to make it available free of charge. So if there was any complications which hadn't been foreseen at the time, would it be the state that would carry the liability there, or would you be looking to pursue the producer?
It's the state. So Ireland, as with every other European country, is part of the advance purchase agreement. We have to indemnify the companies.
Okay. We're very tight on time, but one more question before I let you go. There's a piece in today's Business Post outlining some letters that you received from your Northern Ireland counterpart, Robin Swan, writing to you about what is entitled the Dublin Dodge, basically the non-sharing of passenger records between the two administrations, North and South, so that they don't know if someone has flown in through Dublin and ought to be quarantining. Hmm. You in Dublin don't know if someone has flown in through Belfast, and likewise. It says that the correspondence was never replied to. Was it replied to?
Well, certainly in person, yeah. So Minister Swan and I have had numerous conversations about this, both in person when we've met over the phone. In fact, I was in touch with him just this morning on the very issue. So there haven't been any letters back, but there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. And essentially what they're looking for is very reasonable, which is that when people land, be it in Belfast or Dublin or Cork or wherever it is, that there would be a sharing of the e-locator data, because obviously people move around the island. They're up for it, and the legal advice they have for their jurisdiction is that they can do it. The legal advice, unfortunately, that we have from the Attorney General for our jurisdiction is that it's not possible. So we're still exploring it. There is one potential route through it, which is the EU is now rolling out an EU-wide e-locator form. We're going to be signing up to that now. Obviously, Northern Ireland as part of the UK may not be, but it might be one useful way. And certainly from Ireland's perspective and from my perspective, the more common our approach is on the island, the better.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Minister for Health and Fianna Fáil TD for Wicklow, Stephen Donnelly, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon and on the record.